This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm feeling festive already.
Oh my God.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast had a very weekly pod. UK Tech Weekly Podcast, you might even say, oh God. UK Tech Weekly Podcast laughed at us and called us names. UK Tech Weekly Podcast, join in with our podcast game. Ho, 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 and welcome to this newest sack of pleasure from the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's merriest weekly tech podcast, dropping knowledge down your mental chimney once a week. The UK Tech Weekly Podcast is an infotainment sleigh bell rung by the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK, Computerworld UK, and this week, Digital Arts. Every Friday, we audition for an audio pantomime, slapping our audio thighs, dancing with fading audio celebrities, and insisting that, oh no, we audio didn't, in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. Please don't forget to subscribe, review, and tell your friends. I'm David Price, acting editor of Macworld UK, and today I am delighted to be joined for a festive chat by Principal Boy, Dom Preston, staff writer on PC Advisor and Macworld.
Hello.
Wicked stepmother, Miriam Harris, staff writer on Digital Arts.
Hello.
And back end of the pantomime horse, Scott Carey, online editor of Techworld.
Hello.
This week we are talking design, presence, and Star Wars. Live long and prosper. Miriam Harris. I'll be honest, it's been a pretty crappy year, so can you cheer us up? What's in store for us in 2017?
I think I can cheer us up, but I am taking the challenge to explain visual trends with an audio-only medium, so bear with me. But as you were saying, we definitely have had a year of uncertainty, as we all know, Brexit, Trump, fake news circulating on Facebook, and it's kind of created this environment of not so sure about the truth. So for 2017, the visual trends are kind of translating that uncompromising clarity. So we've just had a look at colour, graphic design, photography, branding, everything that you'll want to know if you are in the creative industries, if you're with a client or a product, kind of wanting to know the context that you'll put it in.
And you say this, but this will actually, I'm guessing, filter through into the sort of the world at large, products at large.
Yeah, you'll see it all around you, billboards, what you buy. It's kind of, you know,
I'm reminded of have you seen The Devil Wears Prada? There's a brilliant bit in that.
I love it.
Where who's the woman in that?
Meryl Streep?
No, but the younger one.
Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway's wearing a blue jumper, and she's saying to Meryl Streep that she's not affected by fashion trends at all. And then Meryl Streep sort of schools her, and she says basically that she chose that colour sort of 3 years earlier and it's filtered gradually through. And I understand, I mean, I have no design eye to speak of, and certainly no fashion eye, but I appreciate that the things that people like you are aware of now, I will wear.
Yeah.
See all the time.
I mean, it doesn't always happen. It's just good to have an idea and context of what of what people are wanting to see and craving to see in their design. So, for example, the colour of the year for 2017 was greenery, chosen by Pantone, and that's kind of reflecting our desire to get back in touch with the great outdoors, bring nature into the home, kind of this engineering nature type thing.
You say greenery?
Greenery.
Is that different to green? Because we already have green.
Well, it's basically green. It's just that's like an earthy, natural green. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's what
I find this fascinating. So wait, Pantone basically like hands down from on high the colour palette for the year.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's going to be a green year.
Yeah, it's going to be green. Yeah, so you'll see it.
Last year was a...
You tell black. Me, David.
Miriam, well, it was, in retrospect, Miriam is aware that I actually secretly looked this up. Last year we had two colours, apparently.
Yes.
Pink and blue. Not pink and blue. What were they called?
Oh.
Rose quartz
and I can't remember the other one.
Serenity.
Oh, that's quite interesting though, because it was the year of rose gold, wasn't it? In our products, I think.
It filtered through into a few. There were rose gold products in 2015 as well.
But there seemed to have been a lot this year.
Yeah.
It went beyond Apple, didn't it, this year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, there's nothing beyond Apple. Apple is where it all ends.
Does that mean we've got green smartphones to look forward to in 2017 then?
Maybe. Oh, but definitely terms of homeware, you'll see that, and in fashion as well, kind of this khaki upcycling mixed in with these deep reds, browns. It's earthy, kind of natural.
What is upcycling?
It's when you
I feel like I'm saying what's up,
it's when you take an old product and you turn it into a new one.
Yeah, so you can dig your old khaki shorts back out there for the year.
I have exactly. Bermuda shorts.
Okay.
I don't think I ever had khaki shorts.
I feel like I've seen a lot of khaki already in British winter fashion, so I think everyone's right on trend there.
Is that a little bit of shade then?
No, I think it's a great colour. You can't really go wrong. And also in terms of photography, we are kind of seeing this rise of women that are more concerned with what she does than what she wears. You can see it in recent campaigns for Nike and Dove, kind of this active, prepared to get her hands dirty type of woman. And this will translate into also a 90s feel for aesthetics, not just photography, but maybe graphic design as well, in terms of this raw emotion, unfiltered portraits. You know, it's all about spontaneity, movement, candid, this kind of truth to capturing a moment. And this personalisation of a story rather than posing. So I'm thinking of 90s photographers, which we talked about earlier, Scott, Wolfgang Tillmans and Terry Richardson.
Yeah, I've heard this sort of 90s thing in cultural circles as well, saying that this year, well, 2017, we'll see a lot more appropriating of like 90s trends. There's been a lot of 80s stuff doing, like Stranger Things was very 80s aesthetic. A lot of Black Mirror in San Junipero went back to 1980s.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see if everything sort of starts referencing the 90s a lot more, which is terrifying, really, as someone that was, you know, born in the 80s, that we're moving through the decades on like a steady.
Well, I was already finding it pretty terrifying with the 80s because I was born in the 70s.
Yeah.
And Stranger Things for me was weird. I was just like, oh, yeah, this is just a normal programme.
Mm.
Actually, it was nostalgic.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah, especially you'll start to see it on social media platforms as well, because they're trying to target that demographic, which were born in the 90s as a general, you know, or late 80s, 90s.
How can anyone be born in the 90s?
I guess I'm a prime example of this. So, yeah, get back in touch with
them. People born in the 2000s are nearly old enough to drink.
Oh, come on. This is all very distressing. Can we talk about people that are older than me? There must be somebody.
There must be someone out
there. Someone out there, anywhere.
Just not in this room. Oh, David.
Scott, you often look at things from a business perspective. Can you see any of this having a business angle? I mean, what about logos? Are companies going to take this on and start having green logos?
Yeah, well,
khaki logo.
It's more the simplicity thing with logos. We've already started to see that with Kodak, NatWest, Co-op, going back to these simple vector-based shapes, returning to their retro logos from the 60s to bring back authenticity and the history of their brand, as opposed to creating, new complex ones.
And who's the agency that's been having like a hell of a year? Like they did Uber, Premier League. I can't remember the name of the agency, but you can see with like the big rebrands at like the back end of 2016 with like Uber, Premier League and Deliveroo, where they went from like complex logos to very sort of simple angular ones. It'd be interesting to see if that continues through.
Yeah, I think it will. I think that's kind of what everyone's craving in a world where, you know, products and logos can be produced so digitally and quickly. It's good to see craftsmanship and authenticity and simplicity out of that kind of.
Yeah, I think with Uber and Deliveroo and even Premier League to an extent, it needs to be clear enough in like the form of an app widget. And that's why
exactly.
Like making it simple makes it stand on your home screen a bit more.
Yeah.
I think that's it, like informed those decisions.
Definitely.
Like we used to change digital magazine covers so that they would work in the little thumbnail in iTunes.
Yeah.
The digital magazine.
Because you can't have it like stacked full of cover lines because you can't read them.
No, exactly. This reminds me of iOS 7 actually. And I'm going to have to get back to Apple. But this is 3 years ago that Apple got rid of all the, they called it skeuomorphism, which is a word I'd never heard of before that year. But they stripped the whole of iOS back down to these, like vector forms.
Took all the simplicity. Instagram's another example that's just changed their little icon from, skeuomorphism to more vector. So, you'll just start to see simplicity in general coming through all of these, different visual trends. And they'll just help you to decide where you want to place your product or your brand or,
So in a way, these trends are in response to what we've experienced in 2016.
Absolutely, I would say so.
Crappy year.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you feel, Miriam, in a way that this is going to have any positive countering effect on that? Is this just designers and artists not having any control over the world and just doodling away and changing that?
I hope it'll have a positive impact, but definitely it's all about just individual kind of stories and your personal taste. So I think trends in general are actually becoming less important now in a world where it's all about collaboration. You know, you see these new brands come out and they've only been in logos and they've only been decided on the visual design through like online blogs of getting everyone involved and deciding, you know, that like Mozilla Firefox is going through that at the moment. They're getting everyone online to decide on the best kind of brand design. So it's all about collaboration.
Isn't that always dangerous?
Yeah.
With like Boatim and Boatface and the like.
Well, the last expansion to the board game Cosmic Encounter was all based on reader suggestions and player suggestions. So it can work, you know.
If you have a nice sort of tuned in audience rather than just the general public.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But obviously. Windows did that, didn't they? The advertising campaign was all about Windows was my idea.
Yeah.
I feel really old. I'm just saying, this has all happened before. But I suppose it is always a cycle.
Well, it's all sick.
Exactly.
Dom, you're going to be talking about Star Wars a little later. We don't want to spoil either the film or what you're going to be talking about, but. Do you have any thoughts on the design in Rogue One? The sort of the conception of a future, and we look back at the original Star Wars films and they look incredibly... I think they've sort of dated quite well, but they look like a very past version of the future.
Well, that's one of the really interesting things about Rogue One is because it's a prequel to the original Star Wars film, sort of a very immediate prequel set just before that film, they've really gone to efforts to capture... that same aesthetic. And I think that ties into that authenticity idea. So, like, they've made a point of getting all of the fighter pilot extras to grow out their sideburns and moustaches.
Amazing.
So that they look like they'd been cast in the original 70s films. And they've actually used some old footage, some sort of cut footage from the original film as well. So you do have this mix of actual 70s extras with current extras designed to look like from the 70s.
Harrison Ford had that, that shirt wide open, didn't he, with all his chest hair sticking
out. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
So funny that was their idea of the future. But.
That's always been one of my favourite things about the Star Wars aesthetic, is that it looks like a very lived-in world. It's not, like, super futuristic. Like, a lot of the spaceships have dings and, like, dirt on them, and it looks like everything's a little bit rough and ready, and a lot of the droids are a bit sort of clunky and rickety and stuff like that, rather than
everything's always broken.
I think it's interesting. Yesterday the trailer, well, some like the teaser dropped for the new Blade Runner 2049. And the aesthetic of that looks very, very similar to the original Blade Runner, even though it's set like, sort of 20 years ahead.
20 or 30, something like that. Yeah.
And it's still got that real sort of steampunk aesthetic. And you've got
a
lot of neon, like that vision of LA, sort of 30, 40 years in the future. And it's interesting that Denis Villeneuve is doing the same thing that they're doing with Star Wars in terms of trying to keep that aesthetic and not trying to rethink it too much or like reinvent the wheel.
The thing that they got really right in Blade Runner was the sort of corporateness of everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought that was really nice. You get that as well in Aliens as well. There's that whole thing about, what's it called?
Weyland-Yutani.
Weyland-Yutani. Yeah. I knew you'd know that. Yeah, well, that's 2017, I should say, which is coming up fast. I don't know where this year has gone. Before we move on to our next topic, let's go around the room. The question is this, 2017 or 2017?
Wow.
Oh, it's got Karen.
Amazing.
2017.
Oh, let's hope so. Miriam Harris.
2017.
And Don Preston.
2017.
Heavily really optimists.
Oh, this is fantastic. Why on earth are we optimists?
I have no idea.
I suppose there is very few people left to die.
I'm an England football fan, so I know that like history doesn't affect my optimism levels.
I don't really understand that reference, but I'm sniggering anyway. Is there football next year?
No, don't worry.
No football. No more football. So let's have a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Christmas presents. Scott Carey, as you know, it's better to give than to receive, which is why I didn't buy you a present. But what are you going to be pulling out of your sack on Christmas morning? That's the second time I've used that innuendo.
You were going to use that more than once. No, I think it's a good opportunity this time of year to talk about some of like the things that have come out this year that we might be buying for people or we might be hoping for. And I think like the big ones this year is like which games console to buy is always a big one. I think this year more than ever it's a really tricky one because there are so many of these weird new like hybrid variants. There's like the PlayStation Slim, the PlayStation Pro, the Xbox One. So trying to work out which one of those to buy is going to be a big struggle for consumers this year. I know that one of my colleagues has just bought the Slim, which is like £260, but then the Pro is £350. And then on top of that, you've got the PlayStation VR, and you've got the big rise of like VR this Christmas time. And you're always Christmas is always the time for the early adopters to sort of jump in and start looking at these things.
Well, this might be an interesting one because I think this is the first Christmas where VR has the potential to be mainstream.
Yes,
a little bit mainstream.
Yeah,
because I think the early adopters have been going at it for a little while, but you might get some normals. Getting VR this Christmas. It's still very expensive.
It is.
What's the best option on VR?
Well, Lewis Painter is our expert on VR here, and talking to him over the past couple of months, he seems pretty bullish on PlayStation VR being the best option here. Obviously, the price difference isn't as useful to you if you don't have an existing PlayStation console.
Right.
So the PSVR is like £350, maybe £400 once you bundle in the camera and the little lightsaber, like pom-poms that I like to call them.
Yeah.
But the Oculus Rift is like an extra £100 on that. The Hive, I think, is an extra £200 on that.
And the Oculus, you'd need a PC?
Yeah.
It has to be a pretty robust system.
Yeah, you need something quite powerful to run Oculus games happily.
So I'm guessing a lot of this is going to depend on what people already own.
Yeah, and also just like aside from all of that, Lewis seems pretty convinced that the PlayStation is just the best of the bunch anyway in terms of how sort of the quality of the build, but also it's the only one that has like some really solid IP behind it in terms of the games. Like there are some proper PlayStation titles with proper VR versions out that's ready for Christmas.
I suppose that's the question, is the content and how well... See, in a way, I'm almost thinking that it's better for IPs to be new for VR because I'm not sure, you know, you take, for example, a Final Fantasy game, if they converted that to VR, would it work as VR?
I think it depends a lot on the game. There's going to be a really interesting test of this in January, actually, because Resident Evil 7 is coming out.
Now they and could work in VR.
That is going to be the full game VR compatible, which is one of the first ones that's happened, and it's going to be it sounds absolutely awful.
Horror really works as VR.
So the whole game is first person. So putting that in VR, I know the demo you can play in VR at the moment. I haven't had a chance to try it out in VR, But the demo is absolutely terrifying. Normally, the idea of going through that in VR and going through that for the full 10-15 hour game, like, I just cannot imagine.
It's bad enough. Yeah, it's bad enough in like 2D, let alone in VR.
I'm worried about trauma in this.
Yes.
I read this really interesting article about VR being used for interrogation and military torture because it's potential, because of the immersion.
Yeah.
You can sort of put somebody in almost any emotional state. And I think they described it as being like the difference between that and normal torture is that there's no chance of dying. Mm. And that's like the downside, is that you'll never have the release of death. VR has got this potential to be this utterly nightmarish.
Cheery, really cheery.
Thought we were trying to be positive.
Yeah.
Thanks, David. 2017, good thoughts.
We've had our cheery bit.
It's all downhill from
scary
here.
Scary bit. Well, Miriam, what's on your Christmas list this year?
Oh, well, I don't know much about technology, but I would say... you can't really go wrong with a coffee table book.
Yeah. Well, we've got the Apple one, haven't we?
The new Apple book, which
Yes.
Did it sell out?
Actually,
I mean, you never know with the selling out if they only bought maybe 12 copies or something. But that
actually looks quite cool. Yes.
How expensive was it?
I should know. It was multiple hundreds of pounds.
Yeah, it was a lot of money.
And it's just pictures, isn't it?
There's no sort of analysis of the design decisions behind each product.
Yeah, which I thought. That might have been interesting. But
talking of really expensive Apple items this Christmas.
that was a really clunky thing.
The wireless AirPods are now available just in time for Christmas.
Yeah.
Do you think people will actually wear them, Scott?
I don't know. They're bundled in, aren't they, with phones that you buy now?
No, you get the what's the difference in that? The earpods. EarPods are bundled with the iPhone 7, but they're wired. The AirPods you have to buy separately, and they're 100.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
£59. Which when I first saw it, I thought that was terrifyingly expensive.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've seen a few people being like, oh, that's more reasonable than I expected. And I really can't seem to work out where people are putting this price point. The thing I find really funny about the AirPods, and that I saw someone talking about yesterday, was you should be able to buy one because I'm definitely going to lose one.
You can. This is the interesting thing as well. I say everything's interesting, but it's £65 to get one replaced.
Okay.
Which is less, you'll notice, Maths fans, that's less than half of the price of the two. And a lot of people have been saying £65 for a replacement. That's an arm and a leg. But I don't think it is. I think that's... I mean, what did you expect to spend?
It works out quite fairly if you think it's 65 for one, two of them makes 130, charging case a little bit more.
Exactly.
So it's a fair proportion of the full cost of the product.
Sometimes
long do they last before... Like, do you have to charge them?
I thought you meant before you lose them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a day.
A day. Okay.
Wait, it's 5 hours in... The AirPods themselves will last for 5 hours, but the charging case holds 24 hours of charge, and you recharge them in the case.
Okay.
Oh, that's quite cool.
The real issue I think most people have with the AirPods is whether they're going to fall out.
Yeah.
And that's something you don't know until you try them. My colleague at Macworld US, Susie Ox, has reviewed them. And she made a video of herself like jumping up and down and dancing and like hitting the side of her head.
Yeah.
Like, and they just didn't come out. They were perfect.
So when what kind of situation would they be best, you know, used in? Better than ones with a wire?
I think just day-to-day, really. Yeah, I mean, I would probably just use them day-to-day, like on my commute. I mean,
at
I wear...
gym.
Yeah, I wear over... Yeah, gym. I mean, gym is
an obvious
it
one.
Depends on
if they'll stay.
Whether they stay. That's the key differentiator there.
But if you've got a scarf on, the wires gets tangled up with that.
Yeah.
Relevant this time of year.
Gym in London.
But I always sort of... Oh, yeah, you wouldn't have the scarf in the gym unless you're being really weird.
So I'm just interested if, like, and it's difficult to say without trying them, but, like, I assume with Apple that they are of a very high quality and a very high quality sound-wise. Because the original white ones with the wired ones are okay. Yeah. But for that price point, they have to be pretty superior to some of the cheaper wireless headphones that are on the market.
Yeah, reports are that the audio quality is good. The fit is good. The main problem, I think, is that it's the Siri control, which seems to be quite clunky at the moment. It's slightly awkward. I think you have to sort of tap them to activate Siri.
Okay.
And then there's sort of a limited sort of palette of phrases that it responds to that aren't necessarily the most intuitive at the moment.
No one uses Siri anyway, so we're fine.
Well, yeah. you need to use Siri with these. They're no more convenient than wired ones, really. There's an issue with the volume increase that you tap them and then you say volume up, and then it increases the volume by, I think, two notches on the scale.
Is that the only way to turn the volume up?
Well, you can still do it through
Do it through your phone.
But that's the only way to do it with Siri. And even if you say something like...
Because I don't want to do that on the tube.
Yeah, wouldn't people find it weird talking to these? I don't like that idea.
I think that's when you have to get your phone out and it's slightly annoying. Mm. Maybe at some point voice control is going to become normalised, but it definitely hasn't yet.
No.
It's got a lot more reliable.
Yeah, in the movie Her, like everyone's doing voice controls all the time, aren't they?
And I still haven't seen that.
Oh, have you not? I mean, yeah, it's really...
Isn't that like a dystopian vision of hell?
It's not dystopian. No. Well, it's kind of dystopian. It's kind of in the middle. But
a light dystopia.
It's
a dystopian comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, if like Wes Anderson did a dystopia. It's a bit zany. but it's sort of jarring watching it in that, but you can definitely envision a world where it's a little bit more normal, especially in urban environments where everyone's got their headphones in all the time. Yeah. Going back to Star Wars quickly, I thought it was interesting because my little cousin is a big Star Wars fan and I hate buying gifts for kids. I find it so difficult. So I was hoping to get him some sort of Star Wars merch. And the interesting thing about Rogue One, which we will probably get onto later, is that where the new Star Wars last year had like really merchable
that's
like a horrible word.
So BB-8, the little circular droid, is you can get a toy version of that remote control. Brilliant gift.
Well, Sphero did a really nice sort of take on that because they already had a little ball that could roll around.
Yeah,
and they just basically
adapted
had a little attachment that sits on the top.
Yeah,
it's really clever.
I think a few of the characters from the new one are a little bit more sort of immediately recognisable. Also, there are lightsabers.
Yeah.
But in Rogue One, there are very few lightsabers, which, again, is an easy gift for a 10-year-old boy. So I was really, really struggling.
Because there's no Jedi in Rogue One. I haven't seen it.
There aren't any Jedi.
Well, there's one.
Is that Darth Vader?
Yeah. But he's in the trailer, so.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm very disappointed about the lack of lightsabers. Lightsaber toys, though, are a bit of a sort of monstrosity. They're not as good as actual lightsabers.
I know.
But the whole thing about lightsabers is that they're like almost magical. Can they cut through anything? Is that right? Have I got that right? Except other lightsabers.
Yeah, pretty much anything. I'm sure people who are bigger Star Wars fans than me will immediately.
Will be a Star Wars wiki or whatever it's called.
Wookiee.
There'll be some type of made up metal that they can't cut through.
Yeah.
I've got no doubt.
Because there was that business with Adam Driver's lightsaber in The Force Awakens. That they had the side guards, but they weren't completely made of light. So they were like little bits. So if you sort of like ching on his lightsaber and then ran down the length of it, it would just cut through the handle anyway.
So it was just
no good.
For show.
Yeah.
But that kind of was an indictment of Adam Driver's character, wasn't it?
It was, because it reflected his lack of self-control.
Yes.
This is all very exciting. I'm sure we're putting people to sleep.
Yeah.
Are there any non-Star Wars toys you're interested in?
There were not so many toys, just because, again, I find it really difficult to buy for children. But one thing I did notice this year is that it might be sort of, in more ways than one, the Christmas that Amazon owned. And Amazon sort of increasingly owns the shopping experience, but also their products seem to be getting really popular this year. I know quite a few people that are getting or are asking for Amazon Echoes.
Yeah,
I've got an Echo Dot for my dad.
Yeah, I've got an Echo Dot that I'm giving to someone. And also the
will that person be listening to the podcast?
Probably not.
That's just fair.
You hope that family support, but you know.
I don't think anybody in my family has listened to the podcast.
Oh, that's a shame. And then the other thing that I got bought for my birthday, which I actually think is a really good product, so I'm now buying it for other people, is the Amazon Fire Stick. And I was really out on the Fire Stick. But now that I've got one, I use it all the time. Like, I went home on Sunday. I really wanted to watch Die Hard. I didn't know what, like, streaming service it was on. So I literally just typed it in, and it was like, oh, yeah, it's there on Netflix. Open Netflix. Bang. I was watching Die Hard within a couple of minutes.
That's so the dream, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's a really good product, and it's £45, which is a really reasonable price to buy for someone for Christmas.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a pretty good point to end, I think. Buy the Fire Stick. There you go.
Yes,
that's what Santa's going to get for a lot of people now. Before we move on to our final topic, which is Star Wars, obviously, let's go around the room. Question is: the most wonderful time of the year, or now is the winter of our discontent? Scott Carey.
The most wonderful time of the year. Why am I so optimistic?
What?
What was the second option?
Now is the winter of our discontent. Have I got that right?
Yeah.
I think so. Well,
basically, is Christmas bad?
No. Wonderful time of year.
Oh, good. Dom?
Yeah, most wonderful time of the year as well.
Great. Well, we are very actually optimistic.
Yeah,
aren't we?
Really good mood.
Great.
Yeah.
We'll be back after a short break to talk about Star Wars.
Spoilers alert! Spoilers alert! Spoilers alert!
Actually, we will try not to do too many spoilers. Dom,
yes,
you have reviewed Star Wars Rogue One for PC Advisor, I believe.
Yep, that's right.
Is it any good?
It is good. Very pleased to say it's good.
That's the end of the podcast.
Yeah,
right.
We're done.
Sorted. That's the review.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I wrote.
What's so good about it?
Got lots. So, for those who don't know, it's a sort of standalone Star Wars film. It's the first one, so it's not episode number anything. It's the first sort of spin-off. There'll be another spin-off in a couple of years with a young Han Solo. This one is set immediately before the first Star Wars film, and it's about a group of rebels who are trying to steal the plans for the first Death Star. So they're trying to find that weak spot that Luke manages to target at the end of the first Star Wars film.
Okay, so right away we have a slight potential issue, which is that we kind of know what's going to happen.
Yeah, so it's all building towards an inevitable point. But the film does a nice job of using that to its advantage. You kind of know where it's got to end up. The challenge is figuring out how it's going to get there. And also, because it's willing to go a bit darker than Star Wars films normally do, the question is, which of the characters are going to make it to the end?
That's the thing I found interesting, that's why the spoilers aren't really spoilers if you're paying attention, because if you've seen the original Star Wars movies, you kind of know where you're going to be at the end of this movie. There are certain aspects of it that are really interesting that you're going to want to find out. But actually, I watched it last night and I had this weird sort of realization about halfway through where I was like, oh yeah, wait, this is a suicide mission. Like, these guys are probably not getting out of this. They're fully aware of that. So it sort of raises the stakes of where we end up in terms of the sacrifice that these guys make, and that sort of darkness is the bit that I really enjoyed about it.
Absolutely, yeah. It sets a different tone, and what I thought, partly because of that and partly because of some of the way it's shot and some of the way the action is staged, it felt to me like the first Star Wars film where it lived up to the Wars bit of the title. Star Wars has always had a lot of action, but it's never really felt like war. It's, you know, rollicking, fun space adventure for the most part.
It's always a happy ending.
The Clone Wars were like the cleanest war.
Exactly.
Ever.
Whereas this really does kind of feel... Yeah, this has that war film feel to it. They made a point of saying they were going for that sort of like classic World War II film, sort of, you know, group of soldiers behind enemy lines on a desperate mission.
There's a lot of water There's a lot of like sort of Saving Private Ryan-esque like soldiers like fighting on the beach kind of thing. Even though they filmed it in the Maldives, which is slightly different to filming it in Normandy.
It's not bad being an actor, is it?
No.
This is the second consecutive film with a female lead.
Yeah.
And I'm going to resist throwing this to Miriam, just because she's the only woman in the room. How are they getting on with that? Because I remember with, what's it called? The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. The two leads were a woman and a black man.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people online were throwing loads of abuse at that because they're idiots.
Because people online.
But this time I've heard less about that.
There's been less. There has been a bit. There was the sort of alt-right movement have kind of moved to
boycott.
Boycott. That's the word I'm looking for. Boycott the film. Apparently unsuccessfully, given what the first weekend's box office results were, which were very good. But yeah, there was a bit of an alt-right sense of not liking it again because of the female lead. This is a fascinating decision on the group of a lot of the alt-right people that the film was somehow anti-Trump. There's nothing in the film that references Trump, even in some sort of very subtle, you know, wink-wink way.
Although, you know, the film is generally not very pro-fascist.
Well, exactly, that's the thing. It's anti-fascist. So by saying it's anti-Trump, you're just basically saying, well, Trump is the empire.
Basically,
they're openly aligning themselves with it. And people have been tweeting, I'm with the empire, as this sort of boycott Rogue One because it's anti-Trump, I'm with the empire.
So you're
really openly agreeing with the fascist space Nazis.
Oh, come on.
But this is partly because one of the writers tweeted and got in a little bit of trouble with Disney over it, apparently. Tweeted that the Empire were white supremacists and that was part of the point of it, which I think is kind of what sparked it all off.
Well, that doesn't work, of course, because the bloke in the last one was a stormtrooper and he was black, so...
Well, that's the First Order, though. That's not the Empire. Because there was actually a point of this in Rogue One where there's a bit where they go to a scientific facility and they sort of bring out all the engineers. And I noticed that all six of the engineers were old white men.
Yeah.
And I was internally thinking, that's terrible, Star Wars, you know, put some women in there, put some ethnic models. And I thought, oh, no, wait, it's the Empire. Yeah. Those are the baddies. Of course they've only got old white men as their lead scientists.
It's kind of the point, isn't it? And that's why, and the Rebels are this sort of ragtag bunch. Like, and the characters in Rogue One are actually a really strange mix of people. Like, you've got Jyn, who is the lead woman, but then you've also got an actor from Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where his partner's from, but it's somewhere else in Asia.
Yep. And got then a bloke who's got a squid for a head.
Yes. The lead man is Mexican.
Yep.
There's Jin's father is Swedish. There's this random mix of accents. And
we've got Forrest Whitaker as Saul Guerrero.
Yeah, no one ever knows what accent he's trying to put up. I went to see Arrival earlier this year and I have no idea what he was trying to do in that.
Miriam, are you going to go and see this? You and me are the two here that haven't seen it. I'm definitely going
to
see it.
I think you have to be a fan or at least have watched them or...
You've not seen any Star Wars?
I have not seen any. I'm so sorry.
I think it is hard to come in cold on Star Wars. Yeah.
You could be foreigners at this point. Do they have Star Wars in New Zealand?
Wow.
Yes. I feel like it was probably filmed there. But, well, we said we'd do spoilers. Is there anything you want to talk about that is a spoiler? Does anybody die that you want to talk about?
As we said earlier, like, there's no point in even spoiling it because it's you kind of know that these people are going into what is essentially a suicide mission, and for me to tell you who dies and who doesn't would just be pointless. You might as well just go and see it.
Yeah.
But then the thing that I found really interesting is that, like, and Family Guy have always been hot on this, is like one of the big criticisms of the original Star Wars film is that, like, the Death Star was way too easy to blow up. Like, it was like this really obvious flaw that Luke Skywalker could go after and, like, hit it with his blaster, and then, like, boom, the whole Death Star goes up. Easy as that. And what this does is it kind of does this revisionist history thing where you realise that it's not a flaw that they missed in the Death Star, but it's actually put there by Jyn's father, who is a scientist for the Death Star, and he gets forced to basically work on this, like, nuclear weapon, and he embeds a weakness, a flaw in the Death Star, and then he transmits that message to his daughter and to the rebels to give them a chance to defeat the Death Star, which is a really clever way of sort of covering up a flaw of the original movie about, what is it, 40 years on, 30 years on, nearly?
Yeah, 35 or something, I think.
Yeah.
I feel so old.
That would be 40 next year.
Wow.
Wow.
Do we feel like Disney is doing a better job of this than we expected?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, when Disney...
Yeah.
What did they do exactly? They bought the
they
franchise?
They bought all
or they
of Lucasfilm.
Just bought the whole IP.
Company.
Lock, stock and barrel.
I mean, I think they have done very well. I wouldn't say it's better than I expected, because by the time they bought it, they'd already been running Marvel for years and doing a very, very good job of running the Marvel film properties and all of that.
The interesting thing with Rogue One is that it was originally set up as a complete standalone war movie set within the same universe. And then I think because of the success of Force Awakens, they kind of had to bring it a little bit more in line with the rest of the Star Wars universe, just because money.
Yeah, I think there's a feeling there were sort of some prominent reshoots earlier this year, and obviously we don't know for sure what was added, what was taken away, but there is, I think, a lot of the feeling that a lot of the closer ties between this film and the rest of the franchise were maybe some of the stuff added in later in the process once Force Awakens made all the money in the world.
Yeah, some of the nods, some of the winks, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of callbacks.
But there's still none of the same characters.
Not in main roles.
I mean, because
no.
of the huge, you know,
there's a few small
time.
You know, characters that pop up in small bits, but none of the main cast are.
And I've got to be honest, this puts me off a little bit, because I really enjoyed The Force Awakens, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of the Adam Driver character, who I thought was excellent. And for me, you know, to start from essentially scratch again, I know the story sort of ties in, but I liked.
But I think it's about expanding the universe.
Dameron Poe.
I think it's Disney making an effort to expand Star Wars beyond just those episode films. And sort of the guy I went to see the film with, you know, he sort of came out of it and said, for the first time, you know, years of loving Star Wars films, watching this film was the first time he came out and thought he wanted to know more about what's called the Star Wars Expanded Universe. He wanted to go kind of play some of the other games, read some of the books.
You don't
want to
go down that rabbit hole.
It sort of opened up that sense of, oh, there is more to Star Wars. There's more beyond just the Skywalker family. I want to know more.
I read
more.
Those novels. I read the Grand Admiral Thrawn novels.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
They were right, but... In fact, no, they're really good.
I've heard they're good.
Yeah, they're really good.
I'd quite like to read them.
No, what I love about these sort of... the idea of these anthology films or these spin-out films is that they are just a little bit more overtly sort of for an adult audience. I know it's a 12A.
Yeah.
And it's... sort of it's still quite Disney, but it also, you know, it's quite dark, and it's a war movie, and there's a lot of aspects to it that feel a little bit more like a proper adult film. And
we
so,
never would have expected that from Disney.
No, so having like that, and they pick good directors, Disney, they pick the right people to lead these things, reshoots or no reshoots. So I think there's a nice mix now of the core movies that are for the whole family, and then these movies which are maybe a little bit more for the older fans that grew up on it.
Good. Good point to end, I think. Positive. Let's go around the room. The question is, Rogue fun or Rogue none? Let's go the other way. Dom?
Definitely Rogue fun.
Miriam?
Well, I don't know.
You could say Rogue,
go Rogue.
Rogue none, I suppose.
That's brutal. I can't believe you said that. Scott?
Rogue fun.
Good. That's the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Feel free to get in touch and let us know your thoughts and opinions, to shake us down for cash or to pay us to have adverts. You can tweet us on any of those topics using the handle at UK Tech Podcast, or you can email us on editor@idg.co.uk. If that sounds like something you'd like, find us on Acast, iTunes, SoundCloud and various other podcast sources. And don't forget to subscribe, comment, like us and tell your friends. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye.
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 UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree.
That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.